Thank you and welcome everyone to this week's Insignio Speaker Series. I'm happy to be joined today by Art De Gaetano. Art from Bromsil, CIO and founder. How are you today?
Doing well. Thank you for having us today.
Excellent. So for those of you who may not know, the Bromsil Fund is a position not only within the IMAPS strategies, but it's also a position that's highlighted in our investment guidebook. So Art, it's a pleasure to speak to you today, specifically as you're a portfolio manager in several of our strategies. So good to be here with you today.
Terrific. Yes.
All right. So let's get started because I'm sure we don't have a lot to talk about, especially in the rate market, right? So give us a very quick overview. Tell us right now, give us your 30,000 foot view on the rate market, the Fed, monetary policy, U.S. economy, all the goodies that people want to hear about.
So I would say that our view is very similar to, say, 25 years ago when I was at Bear Stearns, where on a bad day, the 10-year over the next 2, 3, 4 years will trade at 3.5%. In a normal environment, it'll trade between, let's say, 4.50 and 5. We do not see significant Fed cuts. We see maybe two that'll be more in reaction to a more moderating inflation picture. So Taylor Rule would tell you they should be at 4.50 right now. And you know, when you think about inflation, the pack of bacon that goes from $5 to $8, it's not going back down to $6. It's just going up less fast. So the year over year figures are heading towards 2. I don't think the spirit of the market is thinking that way yet. We're also seeing a little bit of a slowdown from what we're seeing economically. So we're more biased to a range trade. And I would tell you, you know, if you take 09 to 21 out of your brain and you think about 20 years ago where high yield would trade between 8 and 10%, the 10-year note would trade between 3.50 and 5%. And at least that's where we think we're going. And Fed funds will start being 200 over inflation where it used to be years ago. So, so we're not as constructive as people that are thinking the Fed's going to cut 4 or 5 times and the whole curve is going to go to 3%. But we do think it's a great time to be in fixed income because absolute yields have been pretty attractive.
So I'm assuming that being a pretty flexible bond manager yourself, you're in other parts of the fixed income market instead of sort of focusing on the long duration trade based upon what you're telling me. Is that accurate?
Correct. Yes, we continue to have about a third of the portfolio in high quality fixed to floating rate preferreds. Very interesting. These have seasoned now over the past few years. So all names that you would know, JP Morgan, British Petroleum, very secured type of IG credits. We're not in any of the European versions, which have conversion to equity, the way Credit Suisse went to zero, just so you know. But that allocation's very positively convex. And in a rising rate environment, we will get called away in the next 8 to 22 months. And all those coupons reset and will fix for 5 years. They'll reset off 5-year treasuries, 400 to 550 when they're called. So unfortunately, we're probably getting called away. We're going to annualize about a 785 to a call on that entire basket. But if you saw a poor fixed income market, those are going to return positively and have an uncorrelated return. And in a rally, they're all below par, and we're going to get this pull to par as well, plus coupons. So that's our biggest allocation. We do have an allocation to which I think some of the your team members know. Last November, December, we bought across 24 investment grade names: Boeing, Oracle, Starbucks. We bought 30-year duration or maturities that were 3.25% to 4% coupons. So these were issued in 21. They were down approximately 35 points. So we averaged $63 price, around 670 yield. And that entire basket, because of the low dollar price, was about an 8.25 duration. So very interesting. When I think about my own funds in our strategies, if I can buy Oracle bonds at $62 price, close to 7%. That's pretty attractive. So that was an allocation where we did extend duration, but it only took our portfolio up about a year and a quarter. So we're acting in a rally in about a 5.20, 5.30 duration, but in a rate rise environment, we're only going down by about a 2.25 duration because those preferreds and that low IG doesn't really move as much as you would think given the maturity spectrum.
Yeah, so let's discuss the nightmare scenario, the bear case now for not just holders of the fund, but bond holders in general, which is, let's say, a resurgence of inflation where the Fed has to begin anew, forget about cutting, but potentially begin a new rate hiking cycle. Not sure where that is in your sort of a range of cases, but maybe we can discuss. And how could a strategy like yours potentially mitigate against that outcome?
Sure. So always a possibility. I would think it's not probable them sitting where they currently are. We're already starting to see some softness, but let's just say inflation does come up to your suggestion, and they had to raise rates. Think you'd see a massive steepening in the curve where people would get very concerned. You'd probably see 10-year and long bonds do well. I mean, it doesn't sound like they should with rising inflation, but you'd probably see more of a steeper curve similar to the way you saw in the first or back half of 22. Where our portfolio would do well is all those preferreds will get called. So over an 8 to 22-month period, we're going to be getting return capital, almost like a mortgage bond returns principal and interest. We have about 16% of the portfolio that will mature within a year to year and a half, all investment-grade corporate bonds. The long duration allocation I mentioned in those deep discounted IG names, that's about a 14% allocation. You'd have to lose over 120 basis points, 115 basis points to net lose money between the coupon build and where you would be on that duration. So in a rising rate environment, we probably look like a hero compared to most bond managers. Yet if you look at the rally in November, December of last year, we outperformed. So this year, the ag right now, as of this morning, was down 135 basis points. I think we're up about 75 basis points on the year. So, again, not to say that we're so excited about being up 75, but you should think of us as outperforming. I mean, we're going to run between a 6 and 7 coupon, I think, for the next 3 years. So we're going to compound towards 20% on a coupon alone. So yeah, I think we would do well in that environment
And that's
if
based
rates went
upon
up.
current holdings in the portfolio.
Correct. There's still approximately 18% in short-dated treasuries. So we had about a 42% allocation to 1 to 3 month treasuries up until last October. That capital was put to work in the fourth quarter of last year, all the way down to about 18%. So across the firm, we have probably about a billion, I'd say about $1.3 billion in short-term treasuries. I'm not really nervous about that. The 2-year treasury is at 460. The curve's telling you it's not going to get away from you. But I also would think, this is going to be an interesting year. I think it's a lot of people, including myself, you're not really sure the political side, what's going to happen in the U.S., but we want to keep some capital really in place to take advantage of any opportunities and dislocation. I mean, we're always liquid, which I know your team knows. And I don't think I have one. I don't think there's a single name in our portfolio that's defaultable in the sense that Ally preferreds are probably the most volatile. And that's a company Warren Buffett owns 10% of the company. They just became investment grade last year from double B. But we're very high up the quality spectrum, not significant credit beta here.
Yeah. And I'd like to remind everyone that if you do have questions for Art, please submit them into the chat. I'd be happy to read them out to him here in just a few minutes. Art, let's transition now and maybe talk about some other fixed income sub-asset classes that investors might have an idea about. Would love to hear your views on. Let me ask you right off the bat, are investors being adequately compensated in the high yield market, given where spreads are today?
Well, simple answer would be no. Spreads are, on the cash index are about 310. On the credit default market, it's about 325 basis points. I would say spreads are just from quantitative analysis, technical analysis, and let's say years of plenty of scars on me from doing this for over 30 plus years, spreads are unattractive. Absolute yields have been okay because there's been very few defaults. And I would say that arena, a lot of the CFOs of these bigger credits did a great job extending maturities, with post-COVID. So they really did not have a big refi wall coming up. I think in 2026, you start to see that more. But relative value, our structure products team in Newport Beach, they are buying, 65 LTV, 3-year first lien paper at 8.5%, roughly. So when you think about high yield index with unsecured triple C risk at 780 on the index yield, I think that's very unattractive versus other markets, especially compared to structured products.
Right. And tell us perhaps a few more sectors or sub assets where you feel like they're either compelling or they're not, and you think that there's warning signs there.
So I think private credit is something that's very over-allocated to. Not our core competency, so I don't really want to opine on it, but everyone and their, sibling has raised a private credit fund in the last 2, 3 years. And it seems like those credits, if they were so strong, they would have come to the levered loan market or the high yield market. So, why are they going to borrow money at 7-8% over SOFR and give away covenants? So we'll see if any sort of recessionary market hits that area might, see some damage, I think. If you try to sell some of those in the over-the-counter market, lockup vehicles, let's say 7-year vehicle lockup, and now they're 3 years seasoned, the bids tend to be, 75 to 85 cents on the dollar. We just pay attention to that. So maybe those structures aren't marked properly on a mark-to-market net right now. But again, that could be a space that I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, that's about $1.8 trillion now, as it's bigger than the high yield market. So that's an area. Aside from that, I mean, we're not seeing significant credit issues. We're seeing more delinquencies at the consumer level. The last 6, 7 weeks during our risk meeting every week, we're watching 30, 60, 90-day credit card delinquencies go through the roof. You're seeing auto delinquencies pick up. Bankruptcy filings are where they were prior to 2000 and to 07. So it's interesting. I think the consumer hasn't come through yet, but seems like they are definitely starting to weaken here now that there's not COVID support funds that have come in and they're dealing with the higher prices on inflation. At least that's our humble view.
Yeah, that's actually interesting that you bring that up, because I was looking at some data on this very same topic today, and specifically on U.S. household interest payments. And mortgage payments have gone up, obviously, but they haven't gone up nearly as sharply as non-mortgage interest payments. And so they're now, even though non-mortgage interest, as you probably know, is a very small percentage of overall consumer debt. I think it's around only 10% of all the debt outstanding on U.S. household sheets. It's now, because it's accelerated so much, it's gone up so much, it's now equal to mortgage payments in terms of what's costing an average U.S. household budget on. So that's something that's definitely not being talked about. How would you mitigate that risk in your portfolio? What would you do in that case? Because I think that's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up because, like I said, I was just looking at that data today. So.
Yeah, and there's a lot of interest payments that you're talking about. You know, everything from credit cards to
Non-mortgage,
autos
right.
to
Every non-mortgage.
non-mortgage,
Yep, yep,
and
yep.
that's significant. So I'd say before I answer the question on how we mitigate it, overall, and we talk about this, right? Because you have to think about the environment, earnings, economy, where rates are. If you were to look at our debt level, you'd be scared to ever invest, right? So you can't look at that debt level and try and,
Yeah.
figure it out on a daily basis, right? But where you're heading between that and between all of the Medicare expenses, things like that, our interest is really starting to now become an issue as far as a drag, I think, on what's going to be growth in the economy. We're almost borrowing ahead. And there is about $17 trillion that is going to mature in the next 3 years. So this is 2, 3 year, 4 year paper that was issued 5 years ago. Average coupon is about 1.25. So the new reset, as they roll some of this front end, is going to only add to that drag. So if you thought about it, you'd say it's going to lead to a slowdown, right? The government is the biggest spender or driver of the GDP growth. Now go if there's a fiscal conservative that's in place, right? Like we should all, I'm not trying to go on a soapbox here, but we should all probably have term limits here. But let's say you get more of a fiscal conservative thought process. Well, then they're going to cut spending. So I'd say both roads lead to slower growth and slower periods. So combine that with a consumer, and I'm not a grumpy guy where I wake up bearish every morning. No, but I think you to be in fixed income, to be in high quality fixed income, I think serves a very good purpose here. So again, if you caught NVIDIA and things like that, terrific. But there's a really good opportunity here to make 6, 7, 8% on products that are not toxic. And do that net of fee and do that for a while. And if everything rallies, you're going to put a bigger total return up. But I think for us, it's stay invested, but really avoid retail sector. I don't mind the financials. The bigger banks, I feel, are very insulated. You look at those loan books, I mean, it's unbelievable the low default rates that JP Morgan, Bank of America, Citi have. And the regional banks here, we've totally stayed away from in the portfolio. We've done prep work in our bullpen on about 11 names, and the Fulcrum Security are like 4 or 5 year senior unsecured areas. So if you did get CRE issues here and they blow out, I could see us buying some of those at a senior unsecured level that'll mature. But yeah, otherwise, I think the way you mitigate it is through good carry. Don't take too much credit beta. I don't think you need to be in long duration, right? Depending on where the curve's going to go. But that's how we would mitigate it. And again, I think that it seems like it's heading that way. I'm not trying to have a crystal ball here, but that's what seems like is going to be starting to develop here. We're even seeing in the muni market, which we're taking our municipal exposure to zero. Just because,
Why is that? Yep.
yeah, you're seeing California run a $70 billion budget deficit. New York City is going to be closer to $18 billion. I mean, just I don't know what these cities are going to do. They either have to get a bailout at some point, or they have to cut services extremely hard, which will only create more demographics flowing out of these bigger cities. So, yeah, I probably sound like I'm very negative. I'm not trying to be. I'm
Harley,
just
you're
looking
saying
at
that
it.
these cities have to get their fiscal house in order? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're trying to
If you're going to give away free healthcare, you better figure out where you're getting that, at least that revenue. And if there's ever a recession, it's going to be really interesting here. So we're not again, not trying to be gloomy. We're invested. We have, positions on, but yeah, I think you just have to be paying attention here.
No, listen, as a bond manager, I'm assuming obviously you're what you want to protect is catastrophic loss, because that's very difficult to come back from as a bond manager. So I'm sure most people will appreciate that. Maybe last question I'll ask you before I turn it to some audience questions that have come into me directly here. How do you, as a let's say multi-asset fixed income manager, in the sense that you're looking at many different sectors within the fixed income space generally. You can invest in preferreds, you can invest in municipals and in credit and spread. So how do you, what's your secret sauce to know exactly what allocation to have makes sense? Walk us a little bit through your investment process there.
Sure. So, big part of the process is prep work. The way a pro athlete practices 6, 7 hours a day, we do significant prep work. And if on securities, asset classes, and if it doesn't warrant being the portfolio, it goes into what we call a bullpen. So as of this morning, there's about 94 names in the bullpen. But if you're prepared to buy something at a price, even though it's not there in the market, and you have capital, it's the speed of capital to be there, right? So that long IG trade I mentioned, we waited a year on that, and finally it got to north of 650 yield, below $70 price, and then we got in motion. But we were prepared, to the buy. So the prep work is significant. There's sometimes you also have to be flexible. So 4 months ago, I'll give you an example. We saw a bid list. And again, we're trading on the same desks that BlackRock, JP, PIMCO, Guggenheim, and we're like a Navy SEAL team on a bigger ocean, with our capital. So a bid list came in. There was 180 million 2-year JP Morgan bonds that we bought at 670 yields. Now, we weren't looking to deploy capital in the 2-year part of the curve, but when I looked at it with our team, we're going, that's a 14% return in 2 years. We win there, right? So it's kind of as you're almost a taker of price, you try and get prepped for some areas that you think are good. If there's a recession, there's certain names in our bullpen we're going to buy. There are 16 double Bs that are 2.5 to 4 year maturities that we've pro forma'd up that in a recession will probably trade around 8%. And we've already mentally tripped every covenant, shrunk EBITDA, take liquidity to zero. Those all mature. So those will be, a 25% to 30% type of return over a maturity spectrum of 2.5 to 3.5 years. So pretty attractive. So we try and prep four different type of scenarios. If there's a risk-off scenario, one thing I'd mention, which I think is important, and people haven't talked about it, in the last 5 weeks, the correlations are starting to move. So we look at correlations once a week. And if you think about tw in 22, your regular stock bond portfolio all went down, right? If there's a equity move or a risk-off move, I think you're going to get a decent rally in fixed income in treasuries. So that correlation is the old correlation that used to exist. Is starting to creep back into the market. Every week, it's been getting a little more correlated. So that's another way where you might prep for something is to be in more longer dated quality securities. Again, we'll rally in a bigger duration way than our current duration spits out. We're a 4-2 or a 4-5. We're going to rally more like a 5-4. But in a down, we have very good protection. So,
Right. Excellent. So I think we're almost out of time here, but I think we have time for two questions I think we can get through. Let's go over this first one that came in, which says, I think you already answered this. I think you said two, but I'll ask it anyways. How many Fed cuts do you expect this year? And then let me just add on here, how many Fed cuts do you expect next year as well?
would expect 3 this year. I actually think June is more on the table than people think. Would expect maybe 1 the following year. Maybe two. So our view, again, humble view here, I don't think you'll see Fed funds go below 4% in the next 3 years. And I think inflation will be between 2 and 2.5, and the proper spread over inflation, given the amount of treasury issuance, is probably about 200 basis points. So you'll be back to where you were from 1995 to 07, where Fed funds traded 100 to 250 basis points over inflation, whereas from 09 to 21, you were 50 basis points through inflation or 100 over it.
Yeah. At that point, you're gonna want to definitely find some attractive levels there on the fixed income space. And finally, the last one, I'll throw you an easy one.
Okay.
Who's gonna win the U.S. election in 2024?
Oh boy. Yeah, that's a tough one. Well, we were already wrong because we did not have President Biden running, just for not being political either side, but just, I don't think he's mentally there. If I had to pick one or the other, I think Trump will win. You just have to pay attention to some of these lawsuits going on, which could be a snag. Look, we're a mess over here. I mean, I've never seen it as such a almost like poor options on either pick, right? So, hopefully it ends up okay. But if I had to pick one, I would say it looks like I think Trump will win. The inflation side of the pain, of the last 3 years, I think will absolutely not allow the current administration to continue. Let's put it that way.
Okay. Any sort of implications from that result for your portfolio, you think?
Well, look, both parties like to spend money, right? I mean, we saw
That's right.
really, Obama started spending money. President Trump spent a significant amount of money. President Biden did, but then also President Biden spent probably more because of COVID. So, again, you would think someone has to, start to address that. One thing I would say that's interesting, I think people forget, if you remember when President Trump was in office and all rates in Europe were anywhere from 50 basis points to 150, and we were like 2 to 3%, he was yelling basically at the Fed to cut rates. Don't you
That's right.
realize I have to issue a lot of debt? So I wouldn't be surprised if he's a supporter of lower rates, which would be stimulative, you would think. But yeah, that's not the softball question, Ahmed.
Well, I have to leave you with a memorable one. All right,
Okay.
great. Well, Art, thank you so much for joining us today. Like I mentioned to everyone, Art DeGaetano, the CIO and founder of Brahms Hill. Their income fund is a core part of our fixed income holdings over the IMAP side, and they are found within the investment guidebook as well. So, Art, thank you so much for joining us. Pleasure to see you again.
You as well. Okay.
Right.
Take
Take
care.
care.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Insignia Financial Group LLC comprises a number of operating businesses engaged in the offering of brokerage and advisory products and services in various jurisdictions, principally in Latin America. Brokerage products and services are offered through Insignia International Financial Services LLC, headquartered in Puerto Rico, and through Insignia Securities LLC, headquartered in Miami. Both are members of the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, FINRA, and Securities Investors Protection Corporation, SIPC. Investment advisory products and services are offered through Insignia Advisory Services LLC, an investment advisor registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. In Uruguay, advisory services are offered through Insignia International Asesores de Inversión Uruguay, SA, Insignia Asesores de Inversión LATAM, SRL, and Insignia Asesores de Inversión de Uruguay, SRL, in Argentina, and through Insignia Argentina, SAU, and in Chile through Insignia Asesorías Financieras, SPA. Collectively, these eight operating businesses make up the Insignia Financial Group. To learn more about the broker-dealers, including their conflicts of interest and compensation practices, please go to https://insignia.com/disclosures/ or via www.finra.org. To learn about Insignia Advisory Services and any conflicts related to its advisory services, please see its Form ADV and brochure, which can be found at Investment Public Advisor Public Disclosures website, https://advisorinfo.sec.gov/.